What's up, guys? Thank you so much for tuning in into episode 69 of the Dental Marketer Podcast. Just a quick note on my end, the sound quality on my end is not going to be the best quality, but that's okay because the person who you really want to pay attention to in this episode is Reese Harper, and his quality is spot on. So just giving you guys a heads up, I mean, you can still understand me and everything, but just wanted to let you know that the quality on my voice is not going to be the best right now. Also, I have two announcements, two pretty big announcements, so get excited. I have a new service that just came out, and now if you're part of the Dental Marketer Tribe, which means if you're part of the newsletter, right, you've already heard about the service, you've already seen it, and some of you guys have already inquired and signed up, but I do have a new service, and it's a marketing consulting service. So pretty much a consulting service. Now, this service has been brought to you by popular demand, honestly, and I know many of you have been asking for it. Remember how the only thing I did was coach your employee to become a great ground marketer, which I still do that, and I still love working with your team and your employee to become an amazing new patient magnet. However, some of you were looking for just pure marketing strategies, advice, what to do for in-house marketing, outbound marketing, branding, what to do for your ground marketer, because some of you already have a ground marketer, and how can you upgrade them? You know, how can they get paid? I guess their compensation, how can it work out? And, you know, all this other type of advice, ways to attract new patients through referrals in your local community. Where would your marketing dollars be spent for maximum results? What marketing tactics are currently working for you, if any? And many more similar questions that you guys have asked. So that's where my consulting services come in. I help you market properly, effectively, and the most cost-saving way possible. If you guys go on the dentalmarketer.site, that's my website, thedentalmarketer.site, and it'll be in the link will be in the show notes below. Just go on the services tab and then just click consulting, and you'll see a video. And you can also book a free 15-minute consultation with me just to talk about me. Maybe we can fix. And you can also book a free 15-minute consultation there just to talk and see if we're a good fit, or maybe we can actually fix your problem right then and there. So pretty much that's what it is, guys. That's my new service, the consulting service. And let me just mention a couple quick things what the marketing consulting services include. Creating real marketing strategies. You need effective strategies that are evolving and growing, and most importantly, attracting more patients and more businesses, right? Also, I help you identify resource gaps. Sometimes in the do-it-all-yourself world of small business, it's difficult to spot the areas that require outside help. You're probably setting up your own newsletter, adding plugins to your WordPress website, or creating header graphics for your social media profiles. But is this work actually robbing you from your focus on higher payoff work? Those things above might need to be attended to, but I'll help you stop doing the things that are better handled by others, marketing-wise. I also help you fix your conversions. Too many practice owners focus on traffic and likes when the highest priority should be conversion. Guys, it really doesn't matter if you have 1 million followers and 1,000 million likes, or 1,000 to 1 million likes, and nobody's telling you anything. Nobody's converting. Nobody's, if you put a campaign out there, if you put a ad out there, nobody's clicking, nobody's doing anything. You really just have ghosts, because that's not doing anything for you. When you can figure out how to get visitors to your website and prospects that respond to your sales presentations to buy, you can build a significant business. And also, I help you, of course, staying focused. I hold your hand, you know, throughout this whole marketing process. Sometimes you simply need someone to hold you accountable as well, someone to help you document your goals and objectives, and then get you back on track when you wander off into new ideas and social networks. So I'll demand metrics tied to objectives and help you process and understand the value you'll derive by hitting goals. You know, and I'll also review where we're missing opportunities, what needs to be addressed immediately to start seeing more new patients, where we are investing too much time and money and not seeing a great ROI, and so much more. So guys, if you want, just go on the website, thedentalmarketer.site, and then book a 15-minute consultation so we can talk more about any questions or concerns you may have just for free. So click the button in the services page where you see it says consulting. So go to services, then go to consulting, click it, and then yeah, just watch the video if you want, and read a little bit about it, and then book a free 15-minute consultation at your earliest convenience. And let's talk to see how we can take that stress of, why do we have so little new patients this month? Let's take that stress away, all right? So anyways, there's that service. And then my other thing that I want to announce is that I am coming out with a quick fire, maybe like 5 to 10 minutes, Monday morning marketing podcast, or marketing morning Monday. I don't know. Let's play with the words. But it's going to be every Monday morning before 9 a.m. Pacific Central Time. And yeah, pretty much what I want to do is just answer a lot of the questions you guys have had specifically on marketing. I'm going to just touch marketing and not just answer questions, but I'm going to try and put like, hey guys, let's work on this marketing tactic for this week, right? Since it's Monday morning, let's kill it. Let's work on it. Let's see what we can do. Email me your results. Let's get this party started. You know what I mean? Because I really want to start helping out more and more people on a grander scale. That's why I came out with my consulting services. That's why I still do ground marketing coaching. Guys, if you don't know what ground marketing is by now, please go on the website and just look it up. Just type in ground marketing on the search bar, or on Dentistry IQ, you see articles that I wrote about ground marketing. Just go on the website and just click the start here and you'll see all about it. But anyways, I really want to help you guys on a grander scale. So yeah, pretty much that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start with Monday morning marketing, all right? And it's going to be, 5 to 10 minutes, answer some questions if there's any, or just we're going to start on something new that week that we can work on, right? And I want you guys to email me results and things like that. Interact. Let's interact, all right? Anyway, so let's get to the episode. This episode is with Reese Harper from Dentist Advisors. Very, 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 very a great episode. A lot of quotes in here that I wish I can take out and put as like a bumper sticker or something, because he mentions some wonderful things. I like the part where he mentions about financial advisors. Like, you really can't trust every single financial advisor. A lot of them are pretty much, not a lot of them, but quite a bit of them are yes man, right? You hire someone and then you say, you know what? I want to buy this new iTero, and I want to buy this new CAD/CAM, and I want to buy a whole new dental practice. And they're like, yeah, yeah, just do it. Just go ahead. Buy it. But are they yes men? Are they just telling you, like, are they tickling your ear and just telling you what you want to hear? Or are they a real financial advisor? Most dentists have a really bad financial advisor. There's probably a good 3 to 4% who are actually qualified to give dentist advice. And he mentions that in this episode. We also talk about pivoting in dentistry. Now, this means focusing your procedures or your brand or diagnoses or your patient base on certain things. That can mean not accepting a certain insurance anymore because it takes up too much time and a little payout. Or it could mean, you bring an associate just to do that type of patient or that insurance. And we also talk about, sharing equity with certain employees. Is that something you guys think is appropriate, you should do, or we shouldn't do? Why shouldn't we do it? Why should we do it? We talk about that and so much more. I'm so happy to have him. He does have his own podcast, and we mention it on here as well. So guys, without any more delay, I want to introduce Reese Harper, and let's see what he's up to right now. Why don't you tell the Dental Marketer Tribe a little bit about your past, present, and future, and how you got to where you are today?
Well, we'll start back when kind of the birds and the bees and my mom and dad meeting. We'll start back there, or maybe a little bit more recent. All right, fine.
More recent, yeah.
So I have a background in music and in finance. So my master's degree is in finance and my undergraduate degree is in music composition. And that's kind of where my background's been, kind of a mixture between business world and art. I love art. I love music and literature and science. And I love business and entrepreneurship and marketing. I'm probably not great at everything. I
love it.
I love a lot of different things, and I've learned a lot about a lot of different things. And I guess my business started when I graduated. I was working for a large wealth management company, being a financial advisor associate just for some other really smart people and kind of learning the trade. And I was there for 3 years. And during that period of time, I just developed a lot of ideas about how I thought I would do it if I were starting my own company. And I watched a lot of really smart people do things the way they did them and learned a lot from them, and eventually decided to start my own business. And I picked 2008 as the year to start a business in the financial industry. Ooh, so that was a good time. So I went and got a loan, a small business loan from the SBA for, well, I ended up borrowing about $200,000 approximately to start the business. And I just went out and said, okay, I'm going to do this the right way. And I ran out of all of the money within about a year. And, you know, that year was the year that Bear Stearns went under and Lehman Brothers crashed and Wall Street had a pretty big financial crisis. And so it was a kind of a refining fire there for that first year, just realizing how hard it was going to be to get a business off the ground in an industry that was kind of imploding. It really didn't, good news about our economy didn't really start coming out until 2011, 2012, you know, 2013. So it was really tough, and it really taught me to get focused, to specialize, to get really good at something so that people would want to find me and call me and get in touch with me. And so I had a few clients that were dentists when I was working for the company before I started one. And I thought, you know, it took about a year. And after about a year of kind of being a little bit more general practitioner, I decided to take everything I'd learned about finance and only focus on dentists, and have been doing that ever since. So I rebranded my company to dentistadvisors.com, and I got really narrow and really felt like I was able to build a service and a product that really helped dentists make sense of their finances. And I just knew that that was a segment of the market that really could use a good financial advisor, because they're not like the average person where they just have a mortgage and a paycheck. They're a person that runs a business and has a mortgage and a paycheck, and they also run marketing and have operational issues, and they've got to think about expansion and real estate, and they file multiple tax returns, and they've got a corporate retirement plan they have to set up, and they don't know anything about investing. They know nothing about insurance. They don't know anything about accounting and legal issues and lawsuits and all that kind of stuff. And so it was just a really good opportunity to sort of build a business that really focused on all things financial for dentists. And anyway, we're not a CPA firm. We're not an accounting firm. We're just a wealth manager that manages money for dentists all over the country, and a financial planning firm as well, that has a process that is specific to dentists about how we go about mapping out their future. So that's the business, and that's kind of how I got started.
Cool, man. Let's go back to the birds. No, I'm just kidding. Not the birds and the bees.
Birds and the bees.
Let's go a little bit back. So can you sing, or can you play an instrument or anything like that, or no?
Yeah. If you were in my office right now, you'd actually see I have a desk that's my trading desk with my monitors on it and everything that I manage the money with, you know? And then below the desk, there's actually a Roland 88 key weighted piano keyboard that I push a button and it comes out and from hiding. And I can play piano during the day if I get stressed out. So it's nice.
That's your go-to instrument?
Yeah, piano? That's my instrument. Yeah.
Do you like to play?
I love American like historical music, like folk music from the 19th century and 20th century, like Aaron Copland and kind of like Americana stuff. I love like Ben Folds and kind of piano-based rock stuff. I love blues and jazz. I'm a big fan of like musicals, and I like opera. Actually go to opera with my wife, and I love classical music. So I'm kind of like I don't know, dude. I'm all over the board. Like this weekend, I went to a Cinderella musical, Rodgers and Hammerstein play that was in town. Okay. Like,
yeah.
So I love country. You know, country. Yesterday I was listening to the Grammy stuff from 2017, and I love music just generally, and probably appreciate like every genre really a lot. So
musical, like, what's your favorite musical so far that you've been to?
The Carol King musical.
I saw that one. That was
beautiful.
Good.
Was just amazing. I really liked that show. I think it tells a lot about how, you know, women are sometimes in a different position than men in today's world, and it takes a lot for them to sort of overcome some of the like cultural challenges that kind of stop them from succeeding. So I think that was really cool.
I was more shocked that she was like taking the guy back like so many times. I was like,
just leave
it. You're better. But
yeah, I think a lot of people get in that situation, you know, where they kind of get, they don't feel like they can leave a bad relationship like that. So I love that musical. That was a lot of fun. I'm excited for, I haven't seen Hamilton yet. I've got tickets to it, so I'm excited to see it, but I haven't been to it yet. So that one's, I'm looking forward to it.
That's good stuff, man. All right, but anyway. So back to business. So yeah. As a financial advisor, when you were a financial advisor for that company for 3 years,
yeah,
were you scared to go on your own?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it was really scary, and getting that first loan was, I mean, it just rocks you. Like, I remember just kind of being crawling up in a ball, you know, and just sitting on the couch, like holding my laptop, just like turning on ESPN, trying to like get away from the pain, you know? And, it's scary because you don't, you know, there's never an easy time to start a company.
Yep.
No matter how much experience you have. And there's never an easy time to take the risk that is going to be required. And as anyone listening to this podcast knows, you take risks multiple times throughout your career as you achieve new phases of growth. So that first time you step out on your own, it's really scary. But then the first time you consider hiring an associate, like, that's a really scary moment when you're saying, I might make less money than this person for a while. And, you know, or it maybe it won't work out. I'll pay them all this money and they'll leave me, and it'll be a waste of an investment. And then there's the point you have to think about maybe expanding your space or even buying a building or growing your team, taking on another location and another type of service that you haven't delivered before. Bringing implants into your practice in a more integral way that requires even more investing than you've done in the past, both time and money and more equipment. And there's just different phases of growth that aren't easy to make. And yeah, I was definitely intimidated by it. And I didn't view myself as like an entrepreneur necessarily. I think I've noticed that over time, it's really part of my DNA. I don't think I could ever do anything but start companies now. You know, that would be, and I don't plan on doing anything else. This is probably all I'll ever do, but I still feel like I'm starting a business every time we take that next phase of growth or that next level of expansion or a new service line, you know, that we try to deliver. And so I'm always feeling like I just love being in that world, but it really was intimidating. I think it's a scary proposition for me and for most people. Most people aren't born thinking one day I'm going to go and get a bunch of debt and start a business. You know, they don't think that.
So. Yeah. It's uncomfortable. I mean, like our body, like the way it's wired in our brains, like it's homeostasis. Like it's made for us to just be like comfortable, right? So when we put ourselves in uncomfortable positions, everybody's like, what the heck are you doing, man? Like we need to kind of go back to our comfortable position and do all these things. And then, I mean, that's how we grow though. That's how people grow. So you mentioned also you wanted to do business the right way.
Yeah.
What is the right way in the way you did it?
Well, everyone has different opinions, you know, on this, but my perspective comes from like what I mean, as an artist and a musician, you have a really high expectation for quality. Mm-hmm. So when I go to, you know, there's certain playhouses that I'll go to that I know just can nail a performance, you know, and there's certain venues that I won't go to that I know that the production quality is going to be lower, and you just, you gain a, I guess as an artist, you gain an expectation for delivering quality. And I think a lot of dentists are in a similar position where they don't, not all crowns are the same, and not all, you know, two surface fillings are the same, you know, not all periodontal surgeries are the same. There's just a, not, definitely not all root canals are the same.
Yeah, definitely.
And so, you know, I would say that, you know, I have a really high expectation for a quality service and a quality product. And I spend more time on that than the average entrepreneur, because I'm coming from a background of design and art, you know? And so for me, it probably slows down my growth of my company a little bit, because I'm so focused on my client and I'm so focused on the product and the system and the service that, you know, I won't inherently have as big of a company as someone who just is willing to, build a plastic widget and sell it to the whole population, even though they know that it's causing cancer or that it's, you know, not providing jobs or whatever, right? There's just some people that they're pure capitalists. They're purely focused on growing their business. And that's not my personality type. And I'm glad there are people like that out there that are these pure capitalists. I'm glad there are, because, I mean, it provides a lot of growth for our economy and jobs, and it helps a lot of people have jobs that wouldn't otherwise have jobs. And if the whole world was waiting on people like me to grow companies, like, everyone's businesses would be small and really craftsman like, right? And, you know, there needs to be an IKEA, just like there needs to be a really nice wood manufacturing custom desk tailor in, you know, your city. Mm-hmm. And, but I'm probably lean more towards the custom desk builder than I would building an IKEA, right? That's just going to be what I want. A custom desk builder that has operations in multiple states, you know, and that has a big team, but I want to stay true to like a really high quality product that I feel like is sustainable. And so that's my long answer of saying, like, a good business to me is one that knows what it does. And even in that's why a lot of dentists are so successful, is they've inherently made a choice at some point during their education and careers to like put themselves in a spot to where they are one of, you know, 150,000 people in the country that only does dentistry, you know. Mm-hmm. And within, once you pick a practice, there's still another level of specialization to go through, right? Of differentiation to go through and saying, what do I want to be known for?
Yeah.
What's the experience that people could talk about when they come to my practice? Is it how they feel? Is it how they were talked to? Is it the way things were designed? Is it the way we followed up? Is it the way, like, what is it? You know, is it the type of services we offer? Is it the demographics that we are targeting in our practice? There's a lot of ways to differentiate, and if you don't pick one to kind of put money behind, your practice will be kind of mediocre and average and kind of blah, and no one will be able to really remember you for anything. You'll just be the dentist.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be the dentist. You want to be an emotion. You want to be some kind of story, some kind of feeling, some kind of memory, some kind of experience, you know? And it's interesting. I can tell you a few examples of this that I see with dentists where I'm like, it's interesting. That's what I think about when I think of this person. But there's one dentist, who just really, really enjoys fly fishing, right? Mm-hmm. He enjoys fly fishing. He ties flies. He's a real he's a real outdoors person that ties flies. And when I think of this fly tying, fly fisherman dentist, in my mind, I'm thinking of this person that really is OCD about minute details. And I don't know that this has been conscious or kind of subconscious, but in his Instagram account, in his office artwork, in his positioning, right? Indirectly, I don't even know if it's been conscious. I don't, you know, this, it doesn't strike me as the kind of person that's overly focused on making this be like an overt strategy. But I know him as this person who, if you're detailed enough to tie a fly on a fly fishing rod and you do your own fly tying because you're that picky.
Yeah.
You're probably really picky about looking inside of my mouth. and the work that you do in those small spaces. And to me, there's a lot of dentists that they don't have a story like that where I associate them with something. And it doesn't have to be fly tying to be associated with, or it doesn't even have to be anything associated with being a detailed person. But there's some kind of feeling I have with each dentist, and whether that's he's always late and running ragged and thin and never on time for my appointments. That's not a good feeling, but that's the feeling I might associate with you. Right. It's the person that's like got five locations, but they're really not a practicing dentist and all their people are rotating and I never see the same person, that might be a negative association. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it might be there's a five location rotating dental practice with tons of people and I never see the same person, but the experience I have every time feels so easy, on time, enjoyable. I love the hygienist, you know, the system seems great. They always send me good follow-up communication. It seems like they really know my oral health really well and they're tracking it well. They have great technology. There's a lot of ways to differentiate big company or small company, single practice with no associates or multi-practice with lots of associates. There's tons of ways to differentiate, but you have to be something. So when you say, what kind of business are you building, Reese? Well, every day of my life, I'm asked if we will just change the name of our company and take people that are not dentists. Like, will you take optometry? Will you take anesthesia, or focus on attorneys or focus on entrepreneurs? Like, and all of that stuff's really tempting because you can do everything, mm-hmm. you know, you can be a lot of things in your life. And I guess the kind of business that I feel like is doing it the right way is the one that really focuses on something narrow and really tries to go out and achieve it. So that's kind of the business philosophy that I have.
Do you think most dentists don't really know their brand?
Yeah, I don't. I think it's fair to say that most dentists probably don't feel like their brand can be differentiated from other people in their community. Mm-hmm. I feel like they feel like I'm a dentist, you're a dentist, and location differentiates us, right? You're on 9th and 9th and I'm on 7200 West or whatever, right? I think what you don't realize is that in my parking lot right now, where I own a small building that we work out of in a parking lot of a lot of other companies, and there's probably five other financial advisors in the parking lot, and I'm in a parking lot in Salt Lake City, Utah, that is one of the smaller states in the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's not smaller, it's probably a median size. There's a few million people in the metro area. But it's not a Southern California, it's not an LA County. We're not Orange County.
Yeah.
Like, and I have a massive amount of saturation in my parking lot in a small state with small market that has, all of the financial advisors in this parking lot also work with dentists, right? No one in the parking lot that I'm in would say, I don't work with a dentist. All of them here say, we work with everyone. Like, you could be a dentist, a doctor, an attorney, an anesthesiologist, a construction company owner. Mm-hmm. Like, we work with everyone. But I probably have almost a 10% market share of dentists in my state, right? I have the biggest market share of anyone in my state of dentists, and nationally I have a pretty meaningful market share, and we don't do business just in our state. Most of our clients are not in Utah because it's a small market. You know, we're trying to get to 10% national market share, not, you know, 10% of one state that we happen to live in. But my point is, I'm getting inbound phone calls, emails, website submissions, website traffic. You know, just this morning, there's hundreds of dentists on my website before I even got up this morning, reading information that I'm publishing or reading information that we're putting out there that's helpful. And they're doing that because I have a very, very, very clear understanding of my brand and I know who I am. And it's helped me succeed in getting my message out there. And it's really tempting every day to just say, like all the other financial advisors do in my parking lot, you know, we just work with anybody because I don't want someone to come to me and say, I don't want to tell anyone no. Like, I don't want to say no to anyone, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the maybe common thread that every dentist can kind of take. If you're like, if your practice is, if you're one person and you are doing pediatrics and you're doing periodontal work and you're dabbling in endodontics and you're doing a little bit of ortho and you're doing you know, implants, plus you're doing, I probably already said pedo work, but just say you've got like 10 different focuses, yeah, and you're only doing 700,000 collections or 800,000 collections, but it's spread above around like 8 or 9 services. I mean, inherently, if you're in a really small market in a really small town, I get it. Like, and I'm not trying to like pick on that person. Like, sometimes you're just in a spot where you have to take every insurance, you have to take every service that comes through the door, because the population is so small, like there's not an option. Mm-hmm. That's rare though. That's very rare. And I would say unlikely that anyone listening is in that exact situation. Most people don't know who to say no to.
Yeah.
And they don't want to say no to anybody. And unfortunately, if you don't know your brand and you don't know who you're targeting and you don't know who you're going after, and you don't, essentially you never say no to anyone, then you're not going to have a brand. I mean, there isn't a brand. You can't have a brand that, like an organically built brand where you just take everything that comes in the door without thinking and do any service that you're requested to do with any person or any type of person in dentistry. It's going to be a little bit harder to eventually be known for something and have a steady stream of new patients that fit that mold. And mm-hmm. I think it's much harder in dentistry than it is in my business to do that. But to some degree, your brand is a product of whether you've ever learned to say no to something. You know, if there's something that you're going to say that could make money, but I'm not going to do it because I want to go after this other thing. Just to kind of clarify this, like there was a point in my business where for many, many years, we're talking like probably for two plus years, we'll call it 2 to 3 years, I had to make less money so that eventually I could make more money, right? I had to make less money going after the market I wanted so that I could make more money easier later when my brand finally took off, right? And it's the same thing with a dentist. Like if you're in a position where your brand is spread thin across too many channels, too many services, too many people, and then you are trying to pivot to something more focused, you're going to have to at some point take a haircut to get there, because there is no way to get to a more focused, more solid, more organically growing brand without saying no to some things that are currently making you some money. And so yeah, get a hedge, get a savings account, get some liquidity, make sure you've got enough, you know, I'm talking like, you need a year to 2 years worth of reserves, you know, before you make a big pivot. But I do think that's part of getting to that next level, is saying, okay, part of what I'm going to do is I'm going to eliminate this insurance. And mm-hmm. I'm going to tell people that have this insurance that they're going to have to go cash pay, or I'm not going to accept it anymore, because that insurance is taking up time out of my schedule and I'm going to pivot and go this direction. Or you can say, I'm going to bring in an associate to handle that type of insurance and that type of customer, and I'm going to let that customer stay in my practice, but I know that I'm not going to make as much money on it, but I'm going to take a little haircut by bringing an associate to handle those types of patients, because it still makes money. It just doesn't make enough for me to want to focus on it, and I'm going to move up market. Or I'm going to do this type of dentistry, not that type of dentistry, and I'm going to let an associate do this type. There's just conscious steps everyone has to make to position your business further up market. And it's going to require taking a haircut. And whether that's a haircut by bringing on an associate or to do some work that is profitable for the associate and profitable for you, but not maybe it's not the high hourly work that you want to be doing. You might have to take a haircut through hiring someone, or you might have to take a haircut by just saying we're going to collect less for a couple of years, while we redirect our focus towards a better marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. And this focus and specialization, honestly, just can be a marketing strategy too. It can be like, we really are going to go after local search traffic. Like yeah. we're going to really try to position for local search and we're going to do a good job with it. And that's going to require us to put some money towards that. And consequently, I might have to make a little less while I build my brand and get specialized. Or look, direct mail is dying, but it seems to be working. I'm going to use direct mail and I'm going to do it really well. And it's going to be one of the verticals of marketing that I'm actually going to focus on. I'm going to stick with it and I'm going to do it consistently. And I guess, Michael, the thing I would say about marketing in my experience is anything you do consistently over a long period of time will either work or it'll be obvious that it does not work. But you won't know if something's working unless you do it consistently for some meaningful period of time. Mm-hmm. And meaningful to me is months. It's some meaningful period of months that you try something consistently. And if it works, you'll know because you'll start seeing results. If it doesn't work, you're going to be you're going to be in trouble, right? Yeah. Yeah. And you just know you just quit and don't do it anymore. But yeah. I really like that focus. So anyway.
No, yeah, I completely agree. Like to me, I think that would be like the, because I was going to ask you the question, what's one technique strategy that would help you that you've seen or, you know, gain dental practice success? I think that is like key right there. Building, like knowing your brand, because if you market to everyone, you're not really going to get anyone, you know. But if you do a specific market, like, you know what, let's just focus on cosmetic dentistry, let's just focus on ortho or something, you know, you're going to start getting people rolling in, because it's so narrow, but at the same time you can spend as much marketing time, ideas, creativity in that. And I like what you said, like your brand is what you say no to. That could, dude, that's like a bumper sticker right there, man. That's like beautiful, because it's true. Like whatever you say no to, like insurance wise, like for example, over here we have DentiCal, right? Like Medi-Cal yeah. and things like yeah. that. But a lot of dentists kind of right now, and like in some areas I know, they're accepting anything, right? And they're going yeah. super low on their discounts because they see in an ad like, okay, he's doing $1,200 for implants. Let's do $1,100, right? Yeah. And then pretty much they're like, okay, so what's our brand? To me, I'm like, man, your brand is literally discounts. Like if you, like you're, if I want the cheapest of the cheapest, I'm just going to go to you because you know what I mean? Like, and then yeah. they're like, I don't want to be that type of dentist. I'm like, well, that's what you are. I mean, like you're putting yourself out there. And then you ask them like, okay, well, that's the only way I can make money. And it's like, no, you just, like you said, you're going to have to save a little bit, you know, in order yep. so you can make more in the long run. So what would be like, I guess, a strategy or technique you recommend or you suggest no one should ever do, and why?
I guess in my mind, I think I would answer that by just saying, unless you've tried it, I wouldn't say that you shouldn't. So if it's something like certain marketing strategies work really well in practices that just don't work well in other practices. And usually it has to do with the team that's executing it internally or the market demographics, like just being different. And so, you know, I would say one strategy, it's probably easier to say what works for sure mm-hmm. than it is to say what doesn't work for sure. But what doesn't work for sure is like having no written, or like maybe not written is the wrong word, having no actual marketing plan that you're executing, that for sure doesn't ever work. Like if you don't have an actual strategy, like I can tell you today, like my strategy is there's 50 things I could do for marketing, right? There's mm-hmm. 50. I've tried a lot of different things and like only a few things work right now. For me, I have a really successful podcast, and so I double down on the Dentist Money Show every week, and I spend money on Facebook to promote that show. I don't promote booking appointments with my firm. I promote the show because I know the show is the channel where people won't call until they've experienced knowing how we think and how we believe money should be managed, how we think about investing and retirement and kids and life generally. They want to know how we think. So I'm not going to spend money on an ad that says book an appointment because no one will use that. But I will spend money. I've tried it before, you know, but I will spend money saying, go listen to this episode on what fifth graders can teach dentists about money, because I know that they'll go and listen to that and then they'll subscribe and learn. So the podcast is a channel that's worked for me, and that doesn't work for a lot of financial advisors. Everyone, I mean, there's a million podcasts and most people don't have success with them. And that's, you know, that's an indication not of that you're a bad person, or that it's just maybe your audience doesn't want to hear from you that way. Maybe you're struggling to get your message out in that channel. Maybe it doesn't leverage your strengths the right way, but maybe it's too hard for your team to pull off the right way, whatever. Mm-hmm. But for me, that works. And I never would have thought it worked. I didn't start out my business knowing that that would be a good channel for me. And that was something that 5 years in, I figured out. I tried a lot of other things first. I know that speaking works. That works really well for me. So I really try to focus on that. And I know writing articles for a couple of venues that I place articles in really works. And that's all I do. I really do awesome articles. I do a great podcast, and I have great, my slide decks and my presentations have tons of workbooks, and they're really interactive. But I don't do direct mail. I don't do dinners. I don't do email blasts. I don't do paid advertising. I don't do pay-per-click. I don't do, you know, there's a ton of things I don't do because I know what works for me, but I have spent a lot of money trying to figure out what works. Yeah. And I think dentists feel like $500 a month is a lot of on a marketing budget. And so, I mean, a marketing budget is, first, not an amount of money. It's a person, and that's doing what I would call like a vertical or a channel, right? Mm-hmm. And just someone focused on something. And if you give someone a job and say, you do this thing and do it consistently and they do it well, then you can measure whether it's successful or not. But what you don't want to do is give one person like 10 verticals and say, you do all of this stuff, because no one's good at everything, yeah. You know? And so I think it's just important to try a lot of things. And in my experience, I've never been able to spend less than 5% of my top line sales on marketing, never. And I don't think most dentists are spending 1, maybe 1.5, maybe 2. So for me, I feel like marketing is one of your most important employee expenses. It's one of your most important spend areas, because you just borrowed $100,000 to put in that, you know, CT scanner, or you know, you've got, you know, $400,000 worth of equipment debt and TI expenses and a building loan. And the only way you're going to be able to protect that investment is through good marketing. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not encouraging people to go out and just hire whoever and spend money on whatever, because that's another problem, is because most dentists don't want to take, or maybe they don't have the experience or the time to spend becoming an expert in some of the things in their practice related to marketing. They just want to outsource it. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, completely outsourcing marketing without any involvement on your end will also not work. Like, you can't just throw money at the problem either. You have to be engaged with your partner, your marketing partner. You've got to be engaged with your SEO partner. You have to be engaged with your website partner. You have to be engaged with your direct mail partner. You have to know what these people are doing, know what you're paying them for, and whether they're like doing anything good with that money. And if you just have your office manager do it, it won't, you know, the office manager might be really, really good at being one of the people you can delegate to, but most office managers don't have the experience to run a marketing strategy, and they don't have the same intuition that the practice owner might. And so I don't know. I just recommend spending an hour a week to an hour and a half a week. It's probably all they can do. 2 hours a week. You know, you can get to the point on your day off or on a Saturday or in an evening or literally block out an hour of appointment time that you just don't allow to be scheduled to work on marketing and do it your whole career, because I just feel like it's the lifeblood of your practice, and it's the only way that you can protect all the investments you're making in your practice. And I just feel strongly about it. So
yeah.
I know that that might be biased because I think your podcast is The Dental Marketer. So, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not trying to put a plug in for your show. I'm just saying objectively from my own experience, if you don't have a marketing plan, you don't execute it, you know, it's going to be a struggle. The second thing, I mean, I'm not really a marketing guy. I'm a financial person, but I feel like a good financial plan, if you have a really good financial plan and you have a really solid foundation and you have confidence that you're going to be okay and you know that your plan's heading in the right direction, you'll be able to spend more money on some of these key areas and with confidence, because you'll be able to go, okay, either way, if I do this right, I think I'll be able to work will become optional for me at like 61 or at 58, or if I'm doing this right, I should be easily done by 65. So mm-hmm. I have, let's put some money towards protecting this plan, and bringing in the right amount of new patients on a consistent basis. Right.
Yeah. So, and so anyway, what are some of the most important keys for a dentist to build wealth quickly?
In my experience, I would say the first thing is, similar to marketing, like I just don't think you can know more than someone like, my team. Like my team, hiring someone who can run point for you, run quarterback for you, is going to accelerate your learning curve by as much as 10 to 15 years on choices that you would otherwise make if you didn't have guidance. So I don't think most dentists have a financial advisor. They just have a really bad one. And so if you know, there are a lot of well-intentioned, nice people out there, but I mean, I don't think it would be exaggerating to say less than probably 3-4% of financial advisors are in a good position to give dentists financial advice. Like there's probably out of 100 people, I really probably would feel uncomfortable with 95 of them. Mm-hmm. There might be 5 that I'd be like, yeah, this person's compensated objectively. Like they get their fee only. They only get paid for their time or a flat amount for their services or hourly or a percentage of the investment account. But it's not like a commission-based job where the financial planner is getting paid to sell stuff. Mm-hmm. There really is only, it's less than 5% of the country that's even compensated that way anyway. Most people get paid through products they sell. Mm-hmm. And that's just a bad financial advisor, like period. I mean, if it's like your marketing guy, you know, coming to you and saying, I don't get paid at all for strategy. The only way I get paid is if you do an AdWords campaign with me, but I'll do everything else for free, yeah, right? Yeah, everything else is free, but I only get paid through AdWords campaigns, but don't worry, I'll give you good advice in every area of marketing. It's like, okay, yeah, that's not possible, uh-huh, you know? And that's how it is with most financial advisors. They get paid to, if you buy a mutual fund from them or an insurance policy, or they get paid if you buy an annuity, or they get paid if you put your money into this 401k, but they're not getting paid to just build a plan and tell you, you know, they're not, it's like, here's a good example that I think will maybe make more sense. Take a car dealership. Mm-hmm. You can, have you ever been, when's the last time you bought a car, Michael?
It's like 2 years ago.
Okay. So when you, was there ever, did you buy it online or did you buy it from dealership?
I went online to like this app and then I went to the dealership.
Okay.
And then bought it. Yeah.
Bought it. Yeah. You knew what you wanted when you went in. Mm-hmm. When you went in, was there any sort of awkwardness at all with the people at the dealership at all? Like just even a small bit?
Always. There's always like awkwardness.
It's like the most, one of the most awkward things. And it's awkward because you know that the person that you're talking to only gets paid when you buy the car. That's it, right? Yeah. And if you go to a Ford dealership, and they sell Ford cars on a Ford lot. Not to pick on Ford, just an example. I should just say like Mazda or Car A. That's better. Car dealership A. But a branded car dealership that only sells one brand of cars. Mm-hmm. And you talk to a salesman that works for that brand. What are they going to tell you? Go across the street to get a car? Or like they're going to, are they going to go and they say, well, how many people are in your family, first of all? Are you sure you need that size of a vehicle? Are you sure that... have you looked at this? Have you looked at this option? What about this dealership across the street? You know, I mean, imagine a car dealership that instead of being the Ford guy at the Ford dealership selling the Ford cars, imagine if there were three separate groups. There was car consultants that were independent, right? Like just that you could pay $500 to and say, dude, just take me to the place in the city where I could find the best car for my situation. And I want to pay you $500. And that was the cost, right? To do as a car consultant. Yeah. And then there was the cars. Like you got all these car manufacturers, right? Tons of car manufacturers. And that car consultant guy just got, you hired him to go and just know all the cars. And like when you asked him questions and you said, I think I want to get a Lexus IS. I want the IS 350. He could say, are you sure that you want the IS 350? Because it's going to cost you like $6,000 more, and here's four other brands that have identical like features, but they last longer, they're cheaper, and look, this model actually looks really, really good. Are you sure you want that IS? And you could trust him because he wasn't getting paid to sell you any of them. If you buy the IS, he'll go find you an IS. But maybe that Acura, that new RDX was better for you, or maybe, you know, maybe it was the RL. Whatever the car, you could trust that he was like really trying to assess your needs and then find the car that made sense. And then imagine if the car lots, there was just various car lots out there that had like massive amounts of cars from every manufacturer that didn't get paid to sell the cars. It's the cars pay to sit on the lot, right? The cars have to. If to be on one lot that looks awesome, that's organized perfectly, that's one of the problem people have with car lots is like they're not organized very well anyway. Like it's hard to find anything, and because the dealership's not really incentivized to like make it a nice experience on the lot. The lot itself is kind of a mess sometimes, and so here's my example: is in the financial planning world, right now it's exactly you have two options. In the car world, you don't have this option yet. There is no car consultant. And that would be a dream.
I know
that doesn't work that way.
That's a really good idea.
I'd love to do it, but you know, but in the financial planning world, it does exist. You have the option of going to the Ford dealer, getting the Ford car from the guy that works for Ford, or you have the option of going to this giant car dealership that's completely independent and has their only objective is to bring as many cars onto the lot as possible. Like as thousands of cars that are in the best condition for the lowest, the best organized lot. And then you have all these cars that park there and you have car consultants that don't work for the lot and they don't work for any of the car manufacturers. And those are called fee-only financial planners, meaning you, the client, just pay them to go and navigate the world for you and to go to the lots and say, A lot is like a big bank, like a TD Ameritrade, Charles Schwab, E-Trade, Interactive Brokers. Some of the lots have no ties to the cars at all. The cars just park there, and the dealership doesn't get paid by the cars, and that you hire the car consultant. It's this completely like independent transaction. And then some financial advisors literally sell Fords from the Ford dealership on the Ford lot. And about 80% of the country's working in that car dealership from the Ford guy on the Ford lot from the Ford dealership. And it feels awkward and they feel like they're getting sold and they can tell. And anyone listening to this goes, yeah, that's how my guy feels right now. Like that's how it feels. Every time I go to him and talk to him, instead of like telling me I need to refinance my like practice loan or refinance my home mortgage, or we need to get on a different budget for our family, or we need to increase our marketing spend at the practice to grow my collections, all I hear about is like, well, maybe you should like put your money, but maybe you should find a way to put money in this new 401k plan. Or yeah. I think you should buy some more life insurance. Like, you know, it's just really weird. And that's the way it is. And so the industry's changing. And I would say the best piece of financial advice I can give to people listening today would just be, first, get in a situation where you have a financial advisor who's compensated to only teach you, talk to you, that you're paying for their time, and that they're like this independent car consultant. That's what you want. You don't want anyone who's tied to the dealership or to the cars. It's just not, yeah, it's not healthy, but it's the way it is. It's the vast majority of the marketplace is that way. And so I think that'd be the major takeaway that I would give.
I didn't even know that like some financial advisors, pure commission. I thought they were just there to, cause they know what they're talking about. You know what I mean? Like you would think they know what they're talking about. I don't know.
Yeah. But anyway,
so what are the most common questions you're asked by dentists then?
Probably, some of them would be, do I pay down my debt first, or do I start saving money for the future? Like, do I invest or pay down debt, right? That's a really common question. We have a 4 podcast episodes on that subject.
That question. Should pay the debt first?
Well, it depends on the situation. It's a really complex decision. But, you know, it's a common question, and everyone's situation is a little bit different. We also, one of the main questions is, what type of retirement plan should I pick? Like, if I want to start investing, you know, I've got Roth IRAs, IRAs, Roth 401ks, 401ks, profit sharing plans, cash balance, pensions. I've got like, you've got tons of different types of accounts that I could set up. Which one's right for me? And, should that change every year or, because most people, they think once they buy it once, it's kind of done.
Yeah.
But really, like, the type of retirement plan that you should have actually changes probably every few years. Every 2 to 3 years, you'll just move to different plan types. And those will just let you save different quantities of money and save more on taxes. And that's a really hard decision to know. Like, when do I know if I should switch? Because my guy, he's getting paid the same whether I switch or not. He gets paid commission, and it doesn't seem to really talk to me a lot about that stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I feel like if it's somebody dealing with your money, man, there should be communication. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
a lot of communication.
Like, if they just email you like once a month, or they're just like, or you have to email them.
That's
the
probably more common. You have to chase them down for advice.
Nah, see, for me, I'd be like, hey, man, like, tell me what's going on with my money. Like, what's going
on? I need to know what's going on, because you're the guy, you know, a financial advisor literally should be in charge of it. And he should be asking you questions like, do you want me to do this? Do you want me to do that? Should we do this? And you shouldn't be coming to him going, should I pay down my debt now? Well, he should be coming to you and going, like, most financial advisors don't have this much information. Like, our dashboard pulls in everyone's financial picture, and so we can see it. And when someone's business checking account gets above 3 months worth of their overhead, we go, okay, you have an extra $42,000 sitting here. It's time to take that draft out and pay off this loan, or take this draft out and invest it, and we'll draft it for you and put it into the right account. And that kind of communication really needs to be proactive from the advisor to the client. It shouldn't be the client like going to the advisor going, we need to have a meeting and talk about this. And then you bring them all your statements and all your information. And then during the meeting, they're barely able to even analyze what you put in front of them. And they have to go back to their office and think about it now. And then they get back to you a week later. And then it's just really inefficient. It should be more proactive. And that's what really is working for a lot of our clients. And so probably the couple of the really biggest questions that we get are, should I pay off my debt or invest the money? And then what type of retirement plan should I have for my situation? We get a lot of questions about that. And then we get the third, probably most popular, is what should I put my money into? Yeah. Like, should I do gold? Should I do real estate? Should I do rental? Should I buy another practice? Should I hire an associate? Should I, you know, buy the cabin I want? Can I, like, that's a really hard question. Like, what's next?
There's no like set answer for that, right? There's no set plan. Everybody's situation is different, right?
Yeah, it is. But there is an actual answer that is the right answer for every person, right? And that's where people get frustrated is their advisors. I call most financial advisors really are like yes men or yes women. So if the client says they want to do something, the advisor's like, sure, we'll make it happen. But in reality, that's like a really bad financial advisor because you don't know what you should be doing. And if they're just doing what you tell them to do, then that means you're the financial advisor.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like if you're driving the strategy.
You're just looking for an approval, like somebody to be like, yeah, do it.
Okay, yeah, cool. That's how a lot of these advisors are because they might only have one dentist or no dentist. You might be their only dentist or they might have like three. If you don't have like, I don't know, 25, 30 dentists as a financial advisor, if you don't have a dentist in every specialty and at least have one that's young, middle-aged and older in every specialty, you probably don't really know enough about dentists to give advice to just any dentist. I mean, you need to have dentists in every specialty probably and have dentists at each age band. Because the advice you give a 25-year-old is not the same as a 65-year-old and vice versa. And your advice in your 30s and 40s and 50s is all very different. So if your financial advisor works with one dentist, it's like he could say he works with dentists, but then it might be he has a 29-year-old endodontist and you're a 47-year-old orthodontist. Mm-hmm, you know, and that's just not the same advice because you have different incomes, your employee counts are different, the type of retirement plan you can set up is different. How you should, your debt's different. Your practice value is very different. You know, it affects the advice you give in a major way. So I think that you're right. Financial advisors shouldn't be yes men. They should be people that bring advice to clients, and then clients need to approve things and have questions answered. And because every client's going to question your advice a little bit and go, why do we do that? Why are we doing that? Why are we doing this? But they don't want to be the one that has to bring the ideas to you. And so I think there is a right answer on how much you should have in real estate for your income level and your age. There's a right answer for how much debt you should have on your practice for the amount of collections the practice is driving, right? Mm-hmm. There's a right answer for that. And then there's a right answer for how much retirement plan money you should have for your income and your age. And there's a right amount of money that you should have in cash and after-tax savings. And all your money can really only go into four buckets. It can be after-tax money that's either invested or in the bank, but you've already paid taxes on it and it's relatively liquid. It could be in gold bricks in your closet, or it could be in cash, or it could be in, you know, a mutual fund that's really safe. But if you've paid taxes on it, that's like a category. So there's an amount of money you should have in that category. And then there's a question of how it should be invested. Yeah. And then there's retirement plan monies that you can't touch till you're like 60, right? And 59. Mm-hmm. So there's an amount you should have in that, and there's a way it should be invested. And then there's your practice equity, and then there's real estate. Those are the four categories: real estate, practice equity, retirement plans, and after-tax money. And those four categories are the only places your wealth can be. That's the only place it could be, is in those four. And for your age and income level and practice size, all those need to be in a certain quantities, and they need to be invested a certain way, so that it's not the same for everyone, but there is probably guidelines that you should follow. And there's a way to know if you're like outside the norm, like way outside the norm for your age. For example, if you're 35 years old and you have, you know, $20,000 in the practice checking account and $50,000 in, you know, your personal accounts, and you just barely got out of school a few years ago, and you've got most of your money in real estate in your house, and you've got a little bit of practice equity, I'm probably not like feeling like you're in the best situation, but it's not bad. You know, it's not like super imbalanced, because most of your wealth is in real estate. You had to save up for a down payment on a house. And then but if somebody was in that situation and they had no real estate equity and they had very little liquidity and they had a really high practice debt balance, I'd be like, what have you been doing since you graduated? Well, you've been doing since you graduated.
Yeah.
Right. Cause that tells me like something's wrong. Now, if you're 30 and you didn't have really anything to show for it, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But if you're 50 and that's the situation, it's different. And if, let's say you're 50 and you've got all your net worth in real estate, you have no retirement plan assets, you have no liquidity, and your practice value is paid off in full. Okay, so you got a paid off practice and you have all this real estate. Like, you're still, that's still not a good plan, because the only way for you to get money is selling your practice, or, which is okay, that'll convert to cash and you could spend it for a while, but it'll probably last you 3 or 4 years, 5 years. But then you have all this real estate and you can't get real estate like without, you just get rent or you have to sell it. It'd be optimal to have a little bit more balanced situation than that, right? You'd have some retirement plan money, some after-tax money, a paid off practice, and some real estate, just less real estate than you, like, instead of having 100% in real estate, you have 40% in real estate or 50% in real estate. So that's kind of how I look at people in that situation and give them advice is, you know, based on their age, income, and practice collections, how do these four kind of main buckets of assets look? And then how can we be a little bit more balanced in how we're approaching things?
Yeah. And so what's like the one biggest or the most major mistake you've seen dentists make that set them back financially?
Usually the biggest ones are well, that's hard, man. There's like three, but let's just do one. My top off the gut would be like they give money. We just released a podcast last week called "Is Your Custodian Messing with Your Money?" And it's about the Bernie Madoff scandal and how it actually happened, you know, and how Bernie Madoff was able to take, you know, almost $20 billion from people, never really invest their money and never do anything with it, and make it seem like he did, and hide it and steal it. And there's a good documentary called The Wizard of Lies right now. If you haven't seen it, that's the kind of the main Bernie Madoff documentary. It's on HBO right now. Uh-huh. And a lot of people will put their money with a person to invest it, that, and the money goes into that person's individual, in an account in that person's individual name. So for example, the biggest thing that Bernie Madoff did that made this whole scandal happen is he had an account that he held everyone's money in that was in his own name. Mm-hmm. So all of the money went into this big account in his own name. And he was the one that made all the statements around the performance of the investments. So he was controlling the money and he was creating the statements that showed people what was happening with their money. That's very, very dangerous, because there's no third party person that's in the picture that can audit that and say whether he's telling the truth or not, right? Yeah. You just trust him and he's telling you what's going on. Where, let's say today you hire me and you want to set up an investment account and you put $100,000 in it. I'm going to recommend that you set that up at the car dealership thing we talked about earlier, an independent car dealer in your name, right? The dealership will be like TD Ameritrade. That's a custodian, right? They are a big name, or Charles Schwab. So you set up an account, that account's in your name, and they're going to provide statements to you to tell you where the money is at and what's happening with it. Then you hire me, the financial advisor, to have a power of attorney to buy stuff in your account for you, to do things in there for you, to make it grow, right? I'm going to buy the investments. I'm going to build the portfolio. I'm going to reinvest the interest. I'm going to make it grow. But I don't have control over that money. I can't take it out. I can't put it in my own account. It's in your account. It's in your name. And that allows the separation of power to be,
yeah,
you know, and I don't, you might be surprised to know that how many dentists take money out of their accounts and their financial lives and give it to people that have a quote unquote good reputation, right? And say, go knock the ball out of the park, John. I've heard some great things about you. Across the country, there are lots of major fraud and scams, yeah, that happen, that where people lose hundreds of thousands of dollars, and most dentists don't talk about it. Once that happens to them, they they don't want to look dumb, so they don't tell anyone about it and they keep it really quiet to themselves. Mm-hmm. But we see it a lot. And that's a big issue. So you want to make sure that your financial advisor is completely separate from your account. And if you ever do a private investment, I wrote an article for Dental Town called How the Top 1% Get Burned. I think that was the name of the title. Mm-hmm. But if you ever do a private investment, you're subjecting yourself to that kind of risk where someone else now has control of the money and the investment. And if they're not an honest person or they do something with your money that's dishonest, it might be years before you'll ever know. And so we like having a third party custodian, a third party bank, do the accounting and auditing on your account rather than you just giving it to someone else, because that's really dangerous.
So. Yeah, you're right. And then some dentists complain 300 is too much for marketing. So, I mean,
yep.
It's just apples and oranges, man. I don't know, it just depends. But so yep. We kind of covered already what a dentist should look for in an advisor. So at what point in their career should a dentist consider hiring a financial advisor?
Yeah, I think at the point you start saying, I think you should always know who you want to hire and start paying attention to what they say. Like in my case, you want people like listening into your content and learning. But when you get right out of school, I mean, for the first few years, it's really going to all be about like getting the right practice. Mm-hmm. You need to have a financial advisor involved, but that financial advisor would just be the person you trust to help you make the right decision on which practice to buy and how to get things kind of started. And so it wouldn't be when I say financial advisor, I just mean, maybe you got a practice management consultant, maybe it's a CPA, just someone who you feel like can give you good guidance to get the right practice in the right location. In terms of like investing money and growing your wealth and making decisions with your money, I would say at the point you've got 3 months worth of overhead in your practice checking, you have a 6 month personal emergency fund of personal spending. So you got whatever you spend on a monthly basis. Let's say you spend 10 grand a month, you got 60 grand in personal checking, and you got, in the practice, you got 50,000 a month in overhead. So you've got 100,000 to 150,000 in the practice. At that point, you now have a really stable practice checking account and you have a really stable personal checking account. I think it's time now to start saying, what do I do with my money? But until I get to that point, I honestly wouldn't, under some circumstances, I might consider paying down my debt in a very, very like high interest rate student loan that was a small balance. But even if I had a high interest rate student loan at 7.5%, 8%, and if it's a really big loan, I wouldn't start paying my loans down until I got that level of stability, that practice checking balance higher and my personal checking balance to the point where it was had that 6 months worth of reserves in it. At that point, you're really starting to ask the question, what do I do with my money? Where should my money go? Should it pay down debt? Should I invest it? I've proven that I can get into a good practice. I've proven that I can build up cash. I've proven that I don't spend everything I make. I've proven that, like, those are fundamentals. Like, a financial planner is not helpful before that point, because they'll try to be. I promise you they'll try to be. And mm-hmm. they'll come in, they'll want to sell you things. They'll want you to start a 401k like day one. They'll want you to like get money in investments. The reality is there's just some fundamental things you haven't done yet. You probably don't have a marketing plan. You probably don't have any sort of experience with managing a personal budget and learning how to not spend everything you make. There's some things you need to learn that just come with time. And usually I find that takes a few years. If you buy a big practice right out of the gate, that can be different. You know, sometimes it accelerates to where you're in this position I'm speaking of within a few months, but you know, usually it will take a few years to get to the point where you're really stable enough to sort of ask the question, where should my money go?
Yeah.
Cause until you have built up that practice balance of 2 to 3 months of overhead and your personal checking account at 6 months, there's just things you haven't probably done yet that you need to do. And they're not really related to anything significant that's worth paying money to hire a financial advisor over yet.
So like, for example, what if like somebody's struggling, like, you know, financially, like their practice is probably sinking and all this other stuff, right? They don't really pay themselves because overhead's high. You think that's a good reason to hire a financial advisor, or probably they still, what should they do in that
scenario? Well, the hard part about that is really we're talking about consulting now, right? Mm-hmm. And no one wants to hire a consultant because they're like, dude, it's like 50 grand out of the money. And so I would say if you're in that kind of situation, calling someone like a good financial advisor that, I mean, it's going to be rare. Financial planners, our firm will know, like we know we can help people in that situation. And we usually just do it for free and give them an hour or two of advice and tell them who to call to fix the problem. Cause there's consultants that can come in and acutely identify the problem and help fix the problem. Sometimes the problem is you shouldn't own a dental practice. I mean, sometimes that's the problem.
Yeah.
Sometimes the problem is there's no shame in being an associate. Like there's just no shame in it at all. And members of my team who are my associates, like there's no shame in that. Many of them have equity in the business. They might not have as much equity as I do, but there's plenty of upside in it for them. The compensation's really great. They don't have to take on as much debt. They'll retire at an early age. Like it takes a village, right? It isn't like, yeah. Just because you're not a founder or you're not like the only owner doesn't mean you don't have an amazing life ahead of you. But sometimes the answer really is you should not own a dental practice. Like you're just emotionally, you're not cut out for it. Your temperament is just, you don't really want to talk to people. You don't like dealing with anything. You're frustrated by everything. And it's just too much of a learning curve, too much pressure, too much to tackle. And it's like, I wouldn't make that decision like without trying to bring in some consulting and see if you can build some skills. Because I do believe anyone can own a dental practice. It's mm-hmm. just, if you've tried and tried and tried and you're still in the situation, I'd say don't waste your whole career being frustrated. Just make good money as an associate and enjoy your life, because life's too short, you know, to be like frustrated about just stuff that is intuitive to some people and not intuitive to other people, you know? And so if I would say the thing you're describing is something only consulting can really help with. And a financial planner like our firm can do consulting. Like we can do financial consulting sometimes better than a dental consultant can do. But management consulting or leadership consulting or operational consulting or insurance consulting or HR, who to hire, like that's different. And not one consultant's good at all that stuff. So what we try to do is say, let's spend an hour and figure out what the problem really is. Send in some financials to us. Let us check it out. We'll do it for free for an hour. And then if we can identify where the problem is, we'll point you to the right person so that you can go fix that. And once you've fixed the real problem and you've got that practice checking balance up and you've got a personal emergency fund, now it's time and you're there. But you're right. A lot of people are in the situation where they're just in pain. Mm-hmm. And the truth is the student loan is the first amount of debt that you're going to need to grow a company. And if you need to borrow some money to get the right help, and it's the only way it's going to work, I mean, it's something you got to consider. But I wouldn't want to spend $100,000 on a really expensive consulting program that fixes everything. I would want to spend $5,000 here, $2,000 here, $10,000 there, $8,000 there. You know, like there's too much and then there's too little. And you're just going to mm-hmm. have to figure out what's right for your own situation. But there's a difference between financial planning and consulting. And I think you got to just make sure that at least your practice is stable before you start saying it's time for financial planning.
Gotcha. And so last question, what's an important lesson you've learned as a business owner that could be applied to running a dental practice?
I would say for me that your team is everything. Like I would just say team is everything for me. Like I think that I'm who I am because of my team, my associates, I'd call them partners that are kind of my, any shareholder in any company is a partner. And I have some of my employees that have earned or purchased, equity over time. And we're like, you know, constantly assessing each employee's ability to take on more responsibility and grow the company with us. And that involves equity and sharing like the ownership of the company and the responsibilities of the company. And I don't view it as my company. I view it as our company. And then it's not my business. It's our business. And I think that a team, it will feel that, and you'll be able to build some loyalty and some friendship, and life's way more fulfilling if you have a team that you like working with.
Do you think like a dental practice owner should kind of share equity with a employee?
Well, a practice manager, an operations manager, the right person, I don't think that's out of the question at all. I think that could be a really, really inexpensive way to have a massive psychological shift in an employee that would make all the difference in the world. I mean, we're talking about having someone who's going to work with you for 20 years, own 5% of the business that you'll eventually sell. And that'll translate to, let's say you sell it for, so you're doing 800,000 of collections, 900,000 collections, a million collections, and you sell it for $1 million and they get 50,000 dollars or 5% of that sale. At the point you exit, like, is that really like that significant of a, amount of money to give away to someone at the peak of your career when you get to capture 900 and change of it and they get 50 of it? I mean, to me, I'm thinking that their entire career, they're probably going to have a much different level of interest and care and love and responsibility over the business with you. And they probably deserve it as much as anyone else does. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's anyone that would be, I think a 50-50 partnership would be weird. And, you know, and I wouldn't want to partner with, I would never give equity to someone as a hiring tool. I wouldn't be like, you get equity, come work with me. But if someone had been there for 2 or 3 years and I knew that this is a person that wanted to be here forever and I wanted to incentivize them, and I said, every year that you're here, you know, this is, you're going to get a small percentage of the practice. And every year that you're here, if you leave, unfortunately there's a vesting schedule. So you know, you have to stay here to get it, but, you'll earn this much ownership in the practice every year. And I want you to have that, and they get a percentage of the collections consequently, right? Cause you're bonusing them. And to this day, out of hundreds and hundreds of practices that I see, you know, every year, I've probably seen it happen, you know, less than 5 times, right? Aww. It does not happen statistically often, hardly ever. It's more common to have an associate have ownership, and I have no problem with that. And I don't think most dentists would either, but most dentists don't compensate their office managers enough, and they don't hire good enough office managers, and they don't have a good enough benefits package for them. So consequently, the dentist takes on more pressure than they should, and they have to carry the burden of the operation more than they should. And I really feel like they should bring in a capable person, pay them well, a capable person being someone with actual business experience and someone with some level of marketing experience, pay them well and give them upside in the business, and you'll have a much more successful outcome, and you won't have to give up much more than you would just by compensating them on an hourly basis. It's just a little bit more sophisticated institutional approach, right, to doing it. Mm-hmm. And you'd need some guidance and training on it. And, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with it, but that's me. I've done that with my own business, and it's very uncommon. It's very uncommon in my industry, but I think that that's why you get like long-term, and that's why I have like, you know, very low employee turnover, and it's more successful, I think, as a strategy.
Yeah, I completely agree. But all right, Reese, anyway, thank you so much, man, for being with us. This was over an hour long of
Well, you're gonna have to cut it back,
man. Just leave it. Everybody needs to know this stuff. So much information that like, you should start a podcast, which you already have. So,
well, thanks, man.
What's the name of your podcast?
The Dentist Money Show.
Dentist Money Show. And where can everybody find you?
If you go to dentistadvisors.com, dentistadvisors.com is our site. You can go to the listen page. You can go to we have an education library. We're launching another site in probably over the next 60 days that'll have a massive education library for people. And so yeah, if you just go to dentistadvisors.com/listen, you can get all the podcast episodes there and subscribe on iTunes.
Awesome. Awesome. And all that, all the links and everything will be in the show notes below. But thanks already, a lot, Reese, man. Thank you so much for being with us today. It was a pleasure.
Michael, it's been a pleasure, man. We'll talk to you soon and look forward to hearing about all your success moving forward. And thanks for all you do for dentists everywhere.
All righty, man. Talk to you soon. All right.
Thanks. Bye.
And that's episode 69. Thank you guys so much for tuning in into that episode. Like I said, so much knowledge, guys. Hit the replay button. Listen to it again. You guys are going to just kind of just keep ingesting this and meditate on this type of information, because it's very, very valuable, especially if you're looking to hire someone to manage money, right? Especially a financial advisor. So contact Reese. He knows what he's talking about. Or, you know what, first and foremost, go listen to his podcast episodes and see just exactly what it's all about. And the wealth, and I mean, not the wealth, we're talking so much about money, but like the amount of knowledge he has for you guys regarding wealth management and money management is insane. It's impressive. So go listen to his podcast as soon as you're done listening to this one, or go subscribe to it. Guys, don't forget about my consulting services. Like I said, go to the website, thedentalmarketer.site, go to services, and then just click on consulting and look it up. Let's book a free 15-minute consultation at your earliest convenience whenever you can, and let's talk a little bit. Just if you just want to talk to me, like, just book it there, you know what I mean? That, and also don't forget, this Monday coming up, be on the lookout for a new quickfire episode about marketing. Let's start working together on how we can start attracting new patients for your dental practice. With that being said, I believe that's it, guys. I hope you're staying cool out there. And for the ones who are experiencing colder weather, I hope you're staying at room temperature. I hope you're staying pretty warm. And guys, don't forget, if you want to know how many new patients you should be attracting weekly, on my website, I do have a report, a PDF file that you fill out. And when you fill that out, it gives you the results. Just go on the website, on the homepage, scroll all the way down, and you'll see it. And you know what? I'm going to put it back as a pop-up as well. So yeah, fill out that report just so you can get a good number of how many new patients you should be attracting weekly. And that way we can both, you know, like, work on that and attack it together every time you're hearing your Monday morning marketing. Or hashtag 3Ms, I guess. I don't know. But every time you hear that, we can work on it together to work on your goal to see how many new patients you should be attracting weekly. Or maybe we see a much more potential that where we can attract new patients and we can uncover that as well. So like I said, go on the homepage, thedentalmarketer.site, scroll all the way down, and you'll fill out, or you'll find a thing where you just says, you know, how many new patients should I be attracting monthly or weekly? And just click on it and download that free PDF file, free report, and fill it out and let me know. So anyways, with that being said, don't forget to follow me on Instagram under The Dental Marketer. Follow me on Facebook as well, or like the Facebook page, actually. It's under The Dental Marketer. And guys, I'll talk to you soon.